Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program this afternoon. Just a reminder, if any of you are living in the Los Angeles area, you certainly are welcome to come to our adult support group that I run through CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD. And the support group is held at the Center for Learning Unlimited. It's a school for ADD and autistic children. And it's located 2785 Pacific Coast Highway in Torrance. And we're there every Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9. I usually get there at 7 in case anybody who's new wants to come up and talk to me ahead of time. And so today we have on the program somebody who helps me run that group every week. And his name is Julio.
Hello.
Hi, Julio. And Julio has been coming to the group, I guess, now for about a year?
A little more than a year.
A little more than a year. And he's really the mindfulness guru for the group. And we try to do meditation every week. And he's also done a tremendous amount of growth since I first met him. But I think where I'd like to start, if that's okay with you, and he's also a fitness coach. So he's the person that motivates the people who don't want to exercise. And we want to talk today about exercise and mindfulness and how that affects the ADHD brain. But I think what I really want to start with is your story. And so what was it like growing up and not knowing that you had ADD?
Well, it was, it was a very dreadful thing. I can remember my grandma saying that when I was a child, I would, never listen to anyone, put forks in the socket, get electrified, run around, and put them in there again.
You didn't learn.
Yeah, I got lost a few times, and somehow, in crowds, they found me and brought me back. I was in a hospital once for putting a bean up my nose, one of my nostrils, and, they had to take it out somehow.
How old were you?
I think I would have been like two and a half, 3 years old. I don't remember. And so basically, that's when I lived in Mexico, and then got here at 3.5 years old, started kindergarten here. However, Spanish being my first language, and then plus having ADHD, it was really hard for me to learn anything because in order for you to learn the language or learn in English, you have to be able to speak English.
Right.
And also, if you have ADHD, then how in the heck are you going to learn English? You can't even pay attention. So it was a pretty crazy
thing.
How
old were you when you learned to speak English?
Broken English, I call it that. I don't know, I don't even know, seven years old, maybe 8 years old. I just learned it basically by interacting with people. But, didn't know anything about, I didn't learn any grammar in grammar school, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then...
So I guess it was very difficult. What I'm hearing is it was difficult for your grandmother, your mother, your father to really understand you.
Right, right.
As a child.
Correct, yeah.
So did they think you were just spoiled? I mean, I this is what I hear from people sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. My mom, she was very, quiet, didn't really say much. My dad ran the show there. As far as he was concerned, I was just this little devil, this person that just, had no hope in learning and stuff like that, which, I hear other ADD kids go through the same thing too.
Yeah.
But, it was a bad thing. I remember just not getting along with him because I never listened to him or never really listened to anyone. And, I had problems with authority figures. I got suspended a few times in junior high for talking back to teachers. And
so let me ask you something, because that's what they would call today, oppositional defiant disorder.
Okay.
And do you think that that behavior was directly related to your inability to really succeed in school? I mean, were you frustrated? Were you feeling less than?
Oh, very much so. Very stigmatized. I felt that I just didn't belong to any group. You know, you got the group of kids over here that are excelling in school. You got the, you know, the group of kids here that are athletes. You know, I was that misfit, as they say. I just couldn't fit in with anybody. You know, I was down on myself. I felt like, basically, I felt like I was going to school just going through, you know, just to be there because
right.
I wasn't really getting anything out of school.
So you were failing a lot?
Oh, yeah, I failed. I just don't know how I was passed. And then I don't even know how I slipped through the cracks and not caught any, you know, school system's attention and said, you know, let's see what we could do with this.
Well, that's the saddest thing of all. And for parents who are listening, you know, that's the danger zone because I've worked with kids myself and most of them in the Latino population where they have slipped through the cracks and they enter high school on a second grade reading level.
Wow.
And shame on the school for allowing them to continue to go up the ladder when they're exhibiting the difficulties in being able to learn. So what they did is they just kind of let you slip through the cracks and they didn't care. And this still happens today.
Right, and another thing, I mean, it's in the past already, but I think that if perhaps my mom, because I hear that parents, you know, even when nowadays, even when, you know, their kids are trying to be helped by someone in the school system, trying to get them to a better place, the parents get involved and say, no, my kid's okay. And so, you know, I said maybe perhaps my mom would have tried a little harder or something like that would have happened, but I have the feeling that she would have also said, no, he's okay. We'll figure it out. You know, and I think that's not the best.
Do you think that's from fear that they say he's okay because they're in denial?
Yeah, and also this conception of you know, who are you to tell me how to run my child's life?
And that's big in Latino world.
That is huge,
right.
Yeah. They don't really want to recognize that, okay, these people are professionals. You know, we're not. Let's see what the president has to say. Let's give us a try. You know,
right.
Anything to advance to even the playing field, as they say, in school and help my child, you know, increase the chances of my child succeeding. You know, especially since he's I think they call him English learners now. I don't know exactly. It was ESL back in my
right,
day.
Right, ESL.
English is a second language.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, who knows what could have happened. But, you know, again, slipped through the cracks and then I remember getting kicked. So moving along to high school now, I remember going to the principal's office and being told that I was going to get kicked out of high school for lack of, I think they're called units in high school, not credits, but either or.
Okay.
And they were going to send me to a different school, and so I got sent to I didn't even know what units were, to be quite honest. So they sent me to a continuation high school, and so there I was. And, you know, there they basically say, okay, so – you know, just fill in the blanks here, and, you know, there's workbooks. And so I remember if you get to chapter, an example is like if there's 16 chapters, if you throughout the whole school system, you know, throughout your semester, you get to chapter 10, you get a C. You finish your chapter 11, you get a B, and then you finish all 16 chapters of this workbook, you get an A. So that's how I accumulated A's. But, I mean, again, I wasn't learning anything.
Right.
So I graduated from the continuation high school not knowing what a pronoun was. I didn't even know what, you know, how
join
to do
the club.
Didn't even know how to do algebra and everything. So anyway, that was pretty. So I thought school was never for me. And, you know, just going to be a construction. I remember one of my counselors asking me, so what do you plan to do with your life? I'm going to be a construction worker. I mean, I'm a runner. I'm a physical person. School is just not for me.
Right.
So there it is.
So when you got out of high school, what did you do?
So when I got out of high school, I started working in, like, warehouse jobs and, you know, moving boxes from point A to point B, where, you know, using forklifts and, you know, for about 10 years.
Wow.
And I had, and then one day this idea popped up in my brain and said, listen, I think you're a little smarter than this, or something, you know, motivated me to, I just couldn't take it anymore. It was too depressing to just continue to do this for, you know, for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so I seeked help.
What kind of help?
Psychological help. I called at our job through insurance, you're able to have these, you know, like, you know, 3 free sessions with a psychologist.
Okay.
I went and saw a psychologist. This was the second time I tried school, I'm sorry. So backing up a little, I tried school at about 20 and failed. So that just confirmed that I sucked.
You mean college?
College, correct. College.
Okay.
That just confirmed that I wasn't good. And then again, so this was at 22. Then at 28, 29, I said, you know what, I just have to use my hyperactivity drive this drive that I have to push forward, because it's just.
But you still weren't diagnosed yet with ADD.
I wasn't, no.
Right, okay.
So through the help of this psychologist coach, I was able to overcome this. It started in remedial courses, and so I got my, when, you know, I told myself, okay, it's going to take about 16 hours to study, you know, a week, or 30 hours to study a week, and other people could do it in two. So what, you know, I just got to use your drive to do this. So I did it, and I started accumulating A's semester after semester.
You went to a two-year college, El Camino, right?
Right. And so I ended up doing well, but it was just that drive. It was that determination that a lot of ADHD people report and say that they have.
Right.
You know, some, you know, and then there's others that don't, but this is, anyway, this hyperactivity thing that just pushed me.
I think that's part of how people become entrepreneurs in our population, because of that drive, you know,
right,
and the hyperactivity, and, you know, they just keep going and going and going.
And not give up, yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
So through all of this, let's just say at 32, so I tried college back again the second time at 28, and through the help of the coach, psychologist, semester by semester, I started getting the grades, and I ended up applying to four universities and getting into all of them. And, I got into UC Riverside, which I wanted to go at first, and I got into UC Davis and UCLA, and then UC Berkeley accepted me. And so...
Wow, you got into UCLA too?
Yeah, UCLA and UC Berkeley.
Wow, and Berkeley,
yeah.
Wow.
And then, you know, I didn't even know where Berkeley was. I didn't even know it existed, you know. All I know is that a lot of smart people went there when I was 8, maybe at 20, I don't know, 22. I was like, that would never be me. If I'm lucky, I finish a two-year college or some vocational program. But anyhow, I was able to overcome all of that. In fact, UC Berkeley liked my story so much that they flew me out there, and you know.
So, what story did you tell them? Had you been diagnosed at this point?
Still haven't been diagnosed.
So, what was the story? Because I know they love people with ADD at Berkeley. Yeah.
Yes, I believe so. Truly. Basically, I just told them that, you know, growing up, I never cared for college. I didn't see the point in college. You know, I never was good at it. Just like a lot of people, you know, that try something aren't good at it and they just give up.
Right.
So I told them that, and I didn't, you know, and I just didn't really understand what this whole college thing was about. But I told them I was able to overcome all of this through you know, again, through drive, through this ADD drive that I believe we have.
Wait, so you used, I misunderstood, did you use ADD in the essay? I didn't think that you were...
Yeah, I didn't really say, I didn't use it like ADHD, due to my disorder, I was never good at school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, but you were already diagnosed or not?
Officially, no, but the coach, psychologist that was helping me out had...
thought that you had attention deficit.
I think she was certain that I did, mostly certain. It's just that she never wanted to officially diagnose me because she said, well, you know, your drive is helping you through junior college. However, UC Berkeley, it was a completely different ball game. You know, there you have to read, my first semester I remember having to read 12 books.
Whoa.
And prior to that I had read zero books. So I knew that I was going to run into problems, and then is when I decided to go ahead and get diagnosed officially. You know, that was also the advice that the psychologist said, if you go to the university, you start running into these kinds of problems, go get some help and maybe get medicated. And so I did, and so I got diagnosed possibly twice. Once, so what happened is that first semester, I dropped a whole bunch of classes, and I got a bunch of fail, no-fail classes. I was able to work the system somehow and only get one great letter grade class. In that letter grade class, I got an A. It was a pretty easy class for me, sociology.
Okay.
And so right after that semester, I said, I'm out of here. I got to go back home. I got to figure out how I'm going to come up with some money to get diagnosed, because UC Berkeley wasn't diagnosing. I think that they just didn't have the funding to officially diagnose. So I saved up money. I came back home, took a leave, you know.
A semester?
Yeah, two semesters off.
Okay.
They allow that. It's an academic withdrawal, and you can just come back when you're ready. So then I worked, and I got diagnosed by a psychiatrist here in L.A., and then...
And you got medication.
I got medication.
And how did that change your life?
I'll be honest. I'm not pushing for people to get medicated.
Right.
I'm saying for me, it was probably one of the best things I could ever do. I didn't know that I could focus so much. I didn't know that I could sit in class and actually, you know,
retain
what the professor's
yeah.
talking about. Stay focused and read. And so it helped me out tremendously. And who knows what could have happened had my, you know, I got diagnosed, you know, during my grammar school years and you know, we don't know, you know. But
right.
I gotta,
and you can't, and in the world of mindfulness, going to the past causes depression.
Right, right. So, yeah. Right. So staying mindful, that's just what happened there. But, yeah. So anyhow, so yeah, so that's pretty much my.
So you got diagnosed. Did you go back up?
Yeah, I went back up, and so yeah, I ran into other problems there because, like, how can I say, I had the doctor here wouldn't send my diagnosis to a doctor up there to give me the medication, so I had to get re-diagnosed. And when I got re-diagnosed, you know, they gave me this, they put me on different types of medication, which, you know, kind of, how can I say, it takes a while, you know what I mean,
yeah.
to them to get the medication right sometimes. It just, they don't just give you two Tylenols and your headache will go away. This is, you know, with this brain chemistry thing, it could take a while, but, you know, eventually we got it down right. And, you know, so I continued with school to be honest, I did another academic withdrawal because I decided I didn't want to become a lawyer anymore. The first reason why I was there is because I wanted to become a lawyer. And then I worked with lawyers and found out they weren't happy people. So I just said, I'm out of here.
That's
I'm
for sure.
I mean, you know, so a
right.
lot, just like a lot of people that go to school and then, you know, they end up not doing what they went to school for. They get a degree and then they change their mind. So.
But I think that ultimately this was a good thing. Also, you had shared with me that you were not happy up in Berkeley because it was very different than L.A.
It was. And getting there as a, you know, being admitted as a 32-year-old ADHD student, it was really difficult. You know, I didn't have the support system over there. I mean, you know, people my age were either married or had children or were divorced or there were something was engaged, something was going on. I was neither. And
right.
Plus, I was ADHD, so it was even, you know, it was really difficult. So.
And the weather?
Yeah, the weather, yeah. I didn't understand this whole seasonal depression thing until I moved up there and it's foggy, you know, and I was also on, you know, Zoloft antidepressant medication up there, and you know, through mindfulness, and I also think the weather, because of the weather here in LA, I was able to get off of it, and you know, I don't really go to the past anymore much. It's just, you know, just the past doesn't exist. You know, it's just a memory trace, and the future is just a mind projection. And
right.
So, you know, the now is the only thing that ever exists.
So when you came back here, how soon after you came back did you end up at our group?
Well, interesting. Maybe about 7 months after when I came back from Berkeley, just decided to read a lot. You know, the medication helped me out with that. I was doing a bunch of reading, and I felt like I needed a support group. And not to put down other chat groups. I remember I telling you this. Just
right.
I decided to go to two chat groups up in the Bay Area, and this one was different. So the chat groups, it's you want to do they kind
well,
of
well everybody. With Chad, everybody has, excuse me, their own chapter.
Right.
And so this group that I run, and I think I've spoken about this with other people, but I'm going to say it again. The reason it's so different is because it's not your typical ADD group. So we don't spend every week talking about, okay, how can we get organized? Or,
right.
you know, we're really running out of money because we don't know how to spend money. And what do we do about procrastination? No. What I discovered myself over 4.5 years ago when I did the work that I did was that in order to get in control of the negative symptoms, as I call them, of ADD, procrastination and focus and lack of focus and emotional regulation, which is a big one, we need to do the work from the inside out. And so the inside out was really mostly about mindfulness and just really clearing out a lot of schemas from the past. Schemas are a group of thoughts that come up in our head, and they're mostly negative. and they stem from different times in our life, whether our childhood or adolescent or young adult, that we just can't seem to release or get rid of. And through the mindfulness, emotional individuation, which is the process of growing up finally in emotional way. Physically, we're grown. Emotionally, most people in this population are not. That's how I started this group. So when Julio showed up the first night, I still remember when he came in, he started talking about The Power of Now, which was a book that I had read, which really led me then to The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And he was speaking my language. Right. And there are many people in the group who weren't even close to where he was at. So I welcomed him, and I was really excited that he was there. But I think that when you first came, you were more into letting people know what you knew instead of taking that time to sit and listen.
Right, right. I still had this, how can I say, I wasn't, mindfulness is a process. You start by, being in a moment, noticing your thoughts, and, there's these thoughts sometimes that say, you want to let this group know who you are. The ego gets involved.
Right.
So I think the ego got involved a little, and I felt like, I was the one running the show. I just, like a lot of ADD people do, they just start talking, and instead of just, noticing that you have this thought or there's this energy that wants to make you say something, but it might not be, conducive. It might not be in this context relevant or productive.
Right.
You just want to utter the impulsivity that, ADHD, some ADHD folks have. So I think that that I had that. But through going through the group, and reading The Untethered Soul and then going back, referencing it to, cross-referencing it with The Power of Now, I started learning more and more and more how to become mindful. And so now I just, I was able to control impulse, to just be there and listen to people completely, and then just be able to slow the mind down. And every time the mind, the mind wants to utter something, or the mind sends a message to the voice box, or however you want to put this, they want to utter something, and if it's not going to be conducive, or if it's not going to help out, then it's not necessary,
And I think in the process of you taking that initial step back and listening, that you were more able to hear what other people were saying, and then you were one of the really powerful people in the group to reach out to other people who were in pain, because I remember watching you talking to other people and then having people come back to me and saying, wow, I get some really good information, because you read a lot.
Right,
so you
right.
share a lot of books and information.
Right.
But it was soon after you came that you asked if you could come to me one-on-one.
And that also helped a lot.
And we did a lot of work on finding you your passion.
Right, right.
And so we started to think about, I always thought that from the first time I really met Julio that he should be in the helping profession. I'm trying to talk him into, and it's going to happen, going back to school and getting his psychology degree and then his master's, because I know that he just would be absolutely phenomenal. So you decided that you wanted to do some fitness and life coaching.
Right, right. Fitness has always been easy to me, and I feel like there's without even knowing, it's more like an experiential thing where, didn't really do the science on it or anything. But I noticed that when I ran, I exerted a lot of energy. I felt more calm. I felt like I was more focused. I felt happier.
Yes.
And so I said, well, you know what? I want to help people feel this way. There has to be a way, to get somebody to the gym or at least to walk around the block a few times or something like that. I mean, I understand that not everybody is a runner like me, but I most people could walk, or most people could, do other kinds of things.
I think that, in our population, and I'm sure there's other populations as well that benefit from exercise, but especially in our population, there's something about the cardio that if we push ourselves and really do the cardio, the endorphins start to kick in the brain, which I think really helps us to calm down and focus more, whether you're on meds or not on meds.
Right, right. This is, if I could reference, there's a doctor called Dr. Rately, I believe. He was a co-author of Driven to Distraction, which is Driven to Distraction is a ADHD bestseller.
Great book, yeah.
Correct. And so this doctor also has ADHD, and according to him, and I believe other scientists too, exercise increases the dopamine, I think.
Yes.
Norepinephrine. Right.
So norepinephrine is another chemical in the brain, and increasing that along with the dopamine is more or less like the endorphin thing I was talking about, because dopamine
right.
is the mood chemical. Yeah.
Great. And so these are very also helpful with impulsivity control.
Right.
And it's so similar to medications. And so I was basically like medicating myself without medication, due to running. And I seems to like after I do maybe about 20 to 30 minutes of cardio, I feel focused. I feel a lot happier, and I feel more, just in the moment for a good 2-3 hours, and that's just without the same thing that medication. How I feel with medication for the most part, and it also definitely helps me with falling asleep. Sometimes I have issues falling asleep, but on the days that I work out, I have no problem falling asleep. And I know that a lot of ADHD people have these
sleep
problems.
Issues.
Yeah. So it's always, I tried it like last week. Last week I might have only worked out twice a week. I usually run, try to run 6 times a week. Last week I only did it twice. So on those 4 days that I didn't, sure enough, I was up, trying to fall asleep. It took me a little longer than it would if, when I did run.
So when you work out, what is it about being able to go to sleep? Are the thoughts controlled? Are you tired in a good way? I mean, I don't,
Oh, yeah. So I work out in the morning, I do my run, and I feel calm throughout the day. Then I go to work, and at night I'm tired. So my body is just wants to completely give out and go to bed. So I don't know. I think the thoughts, sometimes I guess the thoughts could override that feeling of tiredness and you stay up. But for me, I found that it's the opposite. Like, I'm so tired to where I'm ready to knock out. I mean, go to bed, and boom, I just go to bed. And it's been scientifically proven. I mean, I don't know that for everybody, but I think it's. Mm-hmm.
So you're not on Zoloft anymore.
No.
But you're still taking a stimulant.
Yeah, I'm still taking a stimulant. It's less than I was before. But yeah, the Zoloft is completely gone, and I think that it's, for the most part, it's a combination of exercise and mindfulness. I think the combination of both exercise and mindfulness, the results are twofold. It could do so much for the ADHD population,
right?
In terms of staying in the moment and being focused and helping us with impulse control and autopilot and all that stuff.
So for a moment, because I'm not sure how much I've spoken about this, but so I went from taking 30 milligrams of Adderall in XR to nothing, although at times I do carry around some 5 XRs just in case I have a day, and it's rare, where I really have to focus and I'm feeling I need that extra little boost.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how the process worked for me. Okay, so I started the mindfulness. This was about 4.5 years ago. And probably 6 months into it, I remember waking up one morning and taking my 30 milligrams, and I started to feel very shaky, something I had never felt before. And I thought, gee, maybe I had too much caffeine, but I have the same amount of caffeine every day, which is 1 cup of coffee in the morning. I don't drink coffee throughout the day like a lot of people with ADD do. So I called my psychiatrist and told him, and he said, well, it could be that with the work you're doing, because he knew what I was doing with the mindfulness, you need less. So let's drop you down to 20 and see what happens. So he dropped me down to 20, and for a while, probably 2 or 3 months, I was feeling pretty good. And then the same thing happened. And the reason I'm telling this story is because I wanted everybody who's listening to understand the power that's behind mindfulness, that when you're really working on the mindfulness piece of this and exercising at the same time, because I was going to the gym a lot, I was doing yoga a lot during this time. So your mind is becoming centered, okay, because you're just noticing thoughts, you're not engaging in thoughts, and you're becoming centered, and I didn't need as much medication to help me focus. I was becoming focused purely through the mindfulness. And
right.
Eventually, the same thing happened at 20. I started to feel shaky again. So we went down to 15 and then eventually all the way down to 5, and I didn't need anything. So, you know, for people who say to me, you know, does this really work? You know, how does it work? I don't know whether or not I believe in this. I think one of the things I really wanted to drive home today with you, Julio, because I know you believe so much in mindfulness.
Correct.
How powerful is this when it's done correctly?
Extremely powerful. I think that it's definitely life-changing. Some people, for me it's been life-changing, and for you it's
yes.
been life-changing. And there's research out there already that suggests that ADHD and doing mindfulness, it's going to help. It helps. So some people might say, well, this is more like, this is your story, or this is this X story. And then now there's science behind it as well.
Right.
So now it's being supported, in an empirical way. So, anybody that thinks this is, something that's just,
just like voodoo or
right.
black magic. And here's the other thing. There are certain therapies that are paid for by insurance companies. And in order for them to be paid for, they have to be what is called evidence-based.
Wow.
And now mindfulness therapy is an evidence-based therapy. So it's not only with ADD, because a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody else on the show, and I heard through the grapevine that there was somebody listening who said that they thought I said that mindfulness was only good for ADHD, and I'm so sorry if that's what you heard. That's not what I meant. And I remember saying that day that I had seen a news program that week about how mindfulness was helping all kinds of mental
right.
disorders.
Right.
I mean, it's just incredibly powerful. They're actually using mindfulness in the business world now.
Wow.
Before people have business meetings and they, meditate. Because meditation is the other piece of this that really, I think, ties it all together. It's a powerful piece.
Right, right. And meditation, it's kind of like mindfulness, to my understanding, there's formal and informal. The formal is when you take some time off, maybe in the morning, or just set some time aside and, decide to just practice your attention is just to practice on sensing the breath. So your mind is the focus of it is just on the breath. And then you notice that, after X amount of time, the mind will drift. And so by noticing the mind drifting, you just kind of just accept that's what the mind does, and you just bring it back to the breath.
Right.
And so that's the formal. The informal is it's kind of what we do a lot is being when someone's talking to us, for instance, and our mind tends to wander. We just bring it back, to the conversation.
Right.
And we don't judge the people. We hear it out completely, non-judgmentally. We come from a place of compassion, curiosity, and then that's how we help to focus our attention by just always bringing the mind back to the present moment, to the conversation, because the mind likes to go to the past and likes to go to the future, and it's hardly ever in the present moment. It's
right.
Usually an autopilot, and that's basically what the default mode of the brain is. Which scientists have also confirmed that this is the case.
And one of the things that Julio and I were talking about today, he was saying that he used to have like a little remote that he could press and it would tell him where his wallet was.
Oh, right, right, right.
Right? Like when you were up in Berkeley and so, but what I was saying to Julio is what I noticed for myself, and I know he does too, is when you're mindful, when you're in the moment, I don't lose things the way
right.
I used to. I mean, I know where everything is. I know my phone's where it needs to be. I know my wallet is. I know my keys where they are. And that's because I'm very aware when I'm putting those things down someplace.
Right. I think you're completely, your mind is in the here and now and not worrying about, you know, that you have to be at this place at this time or, you know, that you do this or are you going to do that or remembering a, you know, I don't know, a memory trace of something that happened 2 weeks ago and how you want to get that person back. I mean, this is a mindfulness. That's why it's so powerful with ADD,
right.
ADHD, because you're training your attention. And so
and then there's that neuroplasticity that can happen when you're changing the pattern of the thought process in the brain. So you're not engaging in your thought. So you're not spiraling into negative downward spirals. And so like if you can picture somebody plowing the field to grow vegetables or, you know, that's what happens with neuroplasticity in the brain. The brain starts to plow new places. And in the plowing, when we're using the mindfulness, then that's how it really helps people with ADHD because we do have, it is a neurobiological disorder, and by building those new crevices in the brain, then things can happen in a better way for us. We can stay focused. You know, we're not engaging in the fear, and we're not procrastinating like we used to. I'm not saying we don't procrastinate ever, but not as much as we used to. And when we do, it's not as severe as it was before.
Right. Like Dr. Siegel's a top authority in I think, in mindfulness, the scientific aspect of it. He's doing research over there at the Mindfulness Awareness Center at UCLA. And he doesn't really do mindfulness for ADHD. He just wants to know what happens to the brain when you practice mindfulness. And he said something that resonates very well with me is that when you use your intention to pay attention in a specific way, you sculpt the brain. It's just what it,
right.
That's what it goes back to what you're saying. It's neuroplasticity. So if your intention is to set your attention in the here and the now, and you know what, just being here and the now, you're very aware of what you're doing. Your mind is here. You know that you put the keys by the door,
right.
And they're always going to be there. You know, and then when you come home, you're just basically always, for the most part, trying to live in the moment. And when your mind drifts, you just bring it back. And that's, I think that's the attention, you know, regulation that really helps, you know, with ADHD.
And so to take that to another place as well. So when we're getting ready in the morning to leave the house, so we get up at a certain time because we have to be out the door at 8 o'clock, and in retraining the brain or replowing the crevices in the brain, we need to be on task as we're working towards getting out the door. And that's being mindful. So, for example, it's not about, oh, you know what, let me just check my email for a second. Now, let me just say to everybody who's listening, we're very bad with time.
Right.
It's like a second to us really turns into 20 minutes. I mean,
right.
People in your life who have ADD or those of you who have it and are listening, how many times have you been driving home or driving somewhere and somebody says to you, gee, where are you? And you say, I'm 10 minutes away, but you're really 45 minutes away. Okay, I mean, I remember when my son first got his license, and I thought I would pull, you know, every remaining hair out of my head because I would say to him, how far away are you? Oh, I'm 5 minutes, and 40 minutes later, he's not home. And see, I, at that time, really didn't understand the whole concept of time and how difficult it was for all of us, myself included. I just thought he was being disrespectful
right.
and just lying to me. But he wasn't. He really thought he was 5 minutes away when he was actually 40 minutes away. And I know everybody's experienced this, and we can laugh about it, but when you have a kid who's just driving, it's can be scary. So, you know, when we get up and we're getting ready to go to leave and we start exiting, I call them exits, so we see the computer and we say, oh, I'm just going to get on here and check my email,
right?
So it's 8:30. We're supposed to be someplace at 9, so we're supposed to leave at 8:30, but we're just going to look for a second. Next thing we know, it's 8:45. We're supposed to be at our destination at 9, and now we got to get out the door. Now we get in the car, and we're yelling at every single person who's in front of us on the road because we're not going to get to where we need to get on time.
Right.
So once we get there, and we're probably a half an hour late, we're making all kinds of lies up and excuses, and we're stressed beyond belief.
Right. Absolutely.
Because we're not in the moment. Being in the moment would have been, I'm out the door at 8:30, and I'm at where I need to be at 9 o'clock, and my emails can wait.
Right, and I think that, so with the neuroplasticity we were talking earlier, you're making new neurological connections, and then versus the autopilot where, you know, I'm going to check my email. That's just usually what you do. I want to, you know, or I need to, you know, make this phone call before I get out of here. You're just reinforcing the same old neurological connections that are there, and
right.
really not making that shift in the brain to become mindful, to, you know, wiring these new connections in the brain,
right.
which I think is very important. And again, like for my experience, I think that's the science of it. I don't do, you know, the same things I used to do anymore. The whole let me see if this email that I'm waiting to came, you know, it's been delivered already, you know, before I leave for work, you know, maybe, you know, or stuff like that, or where are my keys, or I think that it's just like these things could wait, you know, and because I'm in the moment. I bring my attention back to the moment.
And I think that, you know, I promise we're definitely going to get on to exercise, but I think this is really important because there's a lot of people listening that have children, and I think a lot of people believe that this isn't something that children can learn, but that is not true. And you talk about neuroplasticity in children, it would be powerful.
Definitely.
And so, but you role modeling these behaviors to your kids is just an incredible thing. So, you know, let's say, for example, your daughter has a dance recital that she has to be to, and she's 7 or 8 years old. And, of course, she's a dancer. She has ADD. You have ADD. And you get to the place, and you don't have the costume that she needs to wear, and you've left her tap shoes home, and she only has her ballet slippers. And she's looking at you, because I've been here, she's looking at you like, okay, I need you to help me, because she's 7 or 8. So let's back up for a minute, and let's be really mindful of everything we need before we leave the house. And so we're all calm, and we're going to leave the house an hour ahead of time, because she's going to be nervous about going to the recital, because I remember I was in dance recitals when I was a little girl. And so we need to get her there on with enough time, and she needs to have everything that she needs to dance. So she needs the costume, she needs the tap shoes, she needs the ballet shoes, she needs everything, and she needs to know that she can depend on her mom or her dad or both to make this happen. So role modeling this kind of behavior and being calm and focused is what we need in families, because so many people that come to me with kids that have oppositional defiant, the family is screaming and yelling. It's not only the kid. The system of the family is broken. The communication isn't there. The role modeling isn't there. There's really poor boundaries in the family. So these are all the kind of things that mindfulness can really help with, if you're willing to put in the work. And this is work.
Right.
This just doesn't happen.
Right.
This takes time, especially the thought piece of it, right? When when we're trying to get just not engaged with those thoughts.
Yeah, and I think work also could have like a negative connotation. I mean, this thing after a while, I mean, at least for me, if not after a long while, it just becomes fun, I think. You start to see the results.
Yeah.
You know, it you know, it hires your self-esteem. You start to just trust yourself more that you'll be on places, you know, on time or at least close to the time rather than, you know, 20, 30 minutes late like you used to. It's all the neurological wiring that's being that's happening in the brain. I suspect, I'm not a scientist, but this is what I've read. And I think some people also don't realize, especially in ADHD community, that some of us don't like to read, because I think due to the medication and you know, partly because of, I can say in a moment now more, I do more reading. But you know, if this is something that you want to, you're questioning, and instead of like, you know, going, putting it down and going to the future and saying this sucks, this is not for me, it might work for you, might not work for me, then I mean there's CDs out there, you know, pop one on while you're driving your car, listen to it, turn to, you know, I think that people you should use, you know, maybe 30 minutes of the day to learn a little more about this. I mean, because then I think that when you could learn and you could speak about it and before you just make judgments, you know, and
right.
Say, no, this is not for me. Because that's what happened to me the first time I was exposed to mindfulness.
Me too.
I was at Berkeley, and I associated mindfulness with, you know, Buddhism and Buddha monks, and we actually have Buddha monks on our campus. And so I said, this is not who I am. This is not me. I'm not that guy. And then we had the hippie people that practice mindfulness. That's not who I am. And then we had other people. So I couldn't associate. You know, I had that association. But you know, I never tried it. I never said, well, you know, this is for everybody. Whether you're a Buddhist or whoever you are, you could practice some sort of mindfulness. It's not a religious thing at all, you know. So
because
anyhow,
it actually started with Buddhism.
Right.
That's where mindfulness and meditation actually come from. I mean, the Buddhists talk about, you know, being empty as being the highest place you can get to. Being empty meaning no thoughts. Well, that doesn't happen to anybody. Because during the day, we all have thoughts that come in. So
right.
Getting around to exercising, right?
Right.
One of the conversations that you and I have had about that is, you know, while you're going to the gym, your mind's telling you, you don't really want to do this. You know, because for many of us, the gym is boring, right?
Right. For a lot of, yeah, I love running, and maybe only one out of, like, my, like, I don't know, so many people that I know like to run. So I just try to say, I guess it's just finding something you like. I mean, some exercise, whether it's like, I don't know, swimming, you know, maybe walking.
Right.
Walking
outside.
Yeah, walking outside for, you know, if you could do 10 minutes, do 10 minutes. I mean, it's all a process, building up, you know. This doctor, again, that co-authored the Driven to Distraction, talks about, you know, if you could do 6 hours of exercise a week, maybe 2 of those days do a high intensity and 4 do a medium intensity. And soon enough, you're going to start to realize that, you know, you went from being able to, I don't know, walk 10 minutes around the, you know, for 10 minutes to walking, you know, 15 to 20 minutes without getting exhausted, and then you know, you could, when you could comfortably walk for an hour, then you move it up to jogging, or you do something else some other aerobic type of activity, which, you know, which will help the ADD people by increasing the dopamine,
norepinephrine.
And these things, you know, help. And again, that's
right.
That's an amazing feeling, I think, that when you do these things.
So as a fitness coach, so what do you do with people when you do fitness coaching?
First thing is so someone comes up to me, for instance, and then there's just like an evaluation. I try to figure out what these people's, you know, the client's history is, whether, you know, how, do they work out, or do they like to work out? Do they have any injuries? Do they have any conditions that you know, limitations and stuff?
Right.
And so then it's basically an assessment, and then after they get I get assessed, then I try to send them out to a, you know, maybe this person just needs to start off with 10 minutes of walking, or maybe this person over here works good, you know, will do really well in a group setting, you know, and then maybe in a kickboxing cardio class, or maybe, so it's every personality is different, and so I try to match personalities with exercises so that to increase the chances of keeping up with the exercise.
So the majority of the people you work with also have ADD.
Right. So they've also reported that, you know, like for instance, one guy that find running pretty easy, but just got lazy and said, you know, I used to run, and I remember when I used to go run 2 miles on the track, and for whatever reason, he got a girlfriend and they started watching movies. So we used a little mindfulness and to where when he wakes up in the morning, he has this thought of, you know what, I think I'll skip the gym today. But we got it to where he notices the thought. He doesn't engage with it. He just says, okay, this is what the brain does. There's a thought. That's fabulous. Okay, become present. Gets up, gets his shoes, and goes to the gym.
So right.
Basically, not letting his mind, his thoughts dictate whether he's going to go to the gym or not.
So what you're saying then is it's kind of twofold, because
right.
If you procrastinate going to the gym, you're going to procrastinate other things as well. And so this mindfulness, which really releases the fear, which is a big part of what we live in, because anxiety and depression and all that helps with procrastination.
Yeah, definitely. It's just basically, just start. I like to say, start before you're ready, whatever that means. You just do it, because the mind is going to try to convince you. It's mind could be like an analytical tool. It'll try to, once it gets convinced that you can't do this, it'll argue with you and it'll win. I can't do this. This is not for me.
Right.
Know? And then you'll just engage in those thoughts, and then you just won't do it. And at the end of the day, it'll just get you upset that you knew you had to go to the gym, but, you know, you self-sabotage, and that could lead to depression and other things. But, you know, going to the gym, you know, a lot of people place a lot of attention in starting instead of what the results are, I think. You know?
So do you notice that excuse me. Do you notice that yoga for people is good? Because it for me, what it did for me was it really helped me to tie all the pieces of the mindfulness together, because there was a lot of meditation going on and being centered.
Yeah, I've never done much yoga, but I've heard from a lot of people that, and also it's one of those it's recommended for through this doctor again. For people with ADHD, I'm sure that it helps with the attention regulation, which I think that's the main thing we for the most part as ADD people, the main issue, right? We don't regulate our attention. Our attention just drifts, and it's not here. We're not in the here and the now. We just, okay, I have to do this, but I'd rather be doing this.
Right. So when you get a new client, and let's say they have 50 pounds to lose, so of course you probably break that down for them so that they're not looking at this massive amount of weight.
Right. What I mostly do is I try to explain to them how they can achieve that goal.
Okay.
And because I'm not a personal trainer, I set them up with the guy that actually will help them do the physical aspect of it. I try to deal more with the psychological aspect.
Right.
Because before you even want to lift the weight or go for a two-minute walk or whatever, there has to be some sort of motivation there. And, you know, personal trainers are more or less the people that show you how to use the equipment or you know, running coach show you how to run. But their focus isn't really on too much on having you stay in the moment and getting through with this. I'm more the guy that, you know, you come to me, I send you to the right person, and then we meet once or twice a week, and we talk about how you're progressing, or how you're liking this person, or should we tone it down a little? You know, we just kind of person that holds you accountable,
right?
Through mindfulness, and then by doing both mindfulness and exercising, you'll definitely find out that the combination is beyond, you know.
So
powerful.
I think in our population, one of the things that can be difficult is establishing a habit.
Right.
And 30 days establishes a habit. So if we, you know, decide that we're going to work out, doing it for 30 days, and I know that doing it 30 days straight, a lot of people would say, are you kidding me? Well, I'm not talking about running for 30 days in a row. I'm talking about doing something for 30 days. Is that more or less how you...
Yeah. I've noticed that it's always, for the most part, that getting started piece. Once people start, you know, we get started, I think the opposite starts happening. The body starts craving the exercise rather than the mind not, you know, finding excuses to not wanting to do it. I think that it flips, and so people just do it more, and they report that they feel better about themselves, and they start seeing results, and they feel like, you know, they could go on for longer periods of time with this exercise, and so many positive things could happen to this, you know, to doing this.
So if you have somebody that you're working with who, you know, starts off pretty strong and, you know, goes to the gym, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, and then all of a sudden starts to slack off and they miss their appointment, they don't show up, how would you go about re-engaging with that person? And has that happened to you?
Not hasn't happened yet, I think, because it's not, the business is not as big as you know, just started. So
right.
I think also by making these people feel comfortable with you, they feel like there's some connection there. They seem to be open and honest and say, well, you know what, I think the personal trainer pushed me too hard today, or last week, and so I took some days off. I know I was supposed to go back, because personal trainers sometimes do that too. But in that sense, I could pick up the phone and talk to the personal trainer and say, let's adjust this, and or find a different route to go.
Yeah, and I think that you know, adjusting it is a really good point. You know, if we could. You could figure out how to adjust it to the point where they're not running away from you. They're coming back. I think that's what you want to see happen. Because
right.
I know for myself, just being an ADD coach and a therapist, in fact, what you and I were talking about this today, especially in this population, a lot of times people don't show up. And, you know, whether they forgot or the work is hard, they don't want to continue to do the work, they're scared, you know, they're in fear, whatever it is, that's, you know, the part of this that can be very frustrating working with people in this population. And you and I have both been here, so
right.
It's not like we never did this. I know I did, and, you know, you said you did too when you were in therapy.
I've flaked plenty of times, and again, it was because this engagement with these thoughts that the mind is saying, you know, this doesn't work. I mean, with mindfulness, the beautiful thing about mindfulness, going back to mindfulness, is that you look at things with openness and curiosity and compassion, and you have compassion for yourself, and so it allows you to move forward.
Right.
When you look, you know, you don't beat yourself with compassion. You don't beat yourself up.
That judgment thing that we're working on in group right now, and I think one of the things I just want to touch upon is how powerful the emotional individuation has been for many people. And it's really helped a lot of people to start to see that there's light at the end of the tunnel in terms of just emotionally growing up. And, you know, you went through the process, and other people in the group have gone through, and there's other people who have not even done the genogram, because I think there's a little bit of fear
right,
related
right.
to that. But it is a powerful process. And in fact, next week we're not going to be doing a show because it's Super Bowl Sunday. But the week after, I'm going to have somebody else from the group who we've spoken to before, and this is David. And David has walked us through his own individuation process that he's done in the group and how the growth that he's made. So he's been on two or three times, and you know David. And he's great.
Yeah,
so,
great, yeah.
You know, we're going to be talking more about that. But that is also a piece of, I think, getting better. When we grow up, we're taking responsibility for things. We can look at things and give ourselves compassion for mistakes that we've made. You know, people that come to you for fitness coaching and, you know, they're on task for 2 weeks and then maybe they miss three times with you, but they have to be able to give themselves compassion and not beat themselves up for that, you know, and use the mindfulness, again, to stay in the moment and be able to show up when they need to.
Yeah, because it's going to happen. I mean, as much as I love to run, I sometimes go 2 to 3 weeks without running, and I just automatically I start noticing the difference in my mood, in my attention, my focus. I go to bed later than I usually go.
Right.
So my body's craving exercise. So then, you know, I don't fall off for that much. I just go back and start doing this all over again. And I mean, I think that we're human. It's human. It's a part of the human experience to fall in these little traps.
Traps. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know what, we've got some questions here, and I think this question is something we didn't touch upon, so this is good, and it's how much does diet fit in with exercise and ADHD? And, in fact, you and I were just talking about this morning. You know, I'm just going to say for myself, I've been a vegan now for probably about 8 or 9 months. It's not a vegan, it's a pescatarian, I guess, because I eat fish. Mm-hmm. But I don't eat dairy and I don't eat gluten. And I was talking to Julio this morning about this because there are doctors out there who, you know, don't believe in this whole gluten thing. But I will tell you, for those of you who are listening, I have met a lot of people with ADD that are highly allergic. I mean, I'm one of those people and I have asthma. I've met a lot of kids with ADD who have asthma. And if I was going to go on for my doctorate, which I'm not because I'd be 90 by the time it was over, I would have done my thesis on that because there's some connection there with the asthma, the lack of oxygen somewhat to the brain, and the ADD. So I think there's some connection. So my diet, and I took sugar out of my diet.
Mm.
So my diet, I feel really good. I have a lot of energy. You know, I certainly could exercise more than I do, and I have to continue on the path of getting to the gym more often, or even walking, you know, up in Palos Verdes where there's hills and it's beautiful, and, you know, I have nature right out my front door, so that would be wonderful too. And not trying to engage in those thoughts of, oh, you can do this some other time, you know, you've got other more important things to do. So what do you think about diet?
I'm not too much. Like I said, I'm not really much. How can I say? Since I'm more like the guy that motivates rather than the guy that prescribes, ways to eat or different exercises to do. I'm more of the guy that just holds you accountable that you follow through
right.
for the most part. But my diet, I've there's so many different diets out there that I read once this book that said people find it. It's harder to do their taxes harder to figure out which diet is proper for them that you know, and it's easier for them to do their taxes on their own. So I don't know. I do the omega 3s. I try to eat salmon.
Right.
There's also doctor recommend me you just have your omega 3s because they're good for the they help out with the brain. The fatty acids there do something to the brain where it, helps you focus more. And I just basically try to stay high protein in the morning and carbs, complex carbs, because I'm bringing a lot of energy. I'm just a a person that you know, through my running, you know, I try, sometimes when I run, I burn, you know, anywhere from 400 to 500 calories.
Okay.
The complex carbs don't affect me as much as somebody that doesn't run at all.
Right.
So I think sometimes when they say stay low carb, I think that's what they're talking about. If you, depending on your, you know, your body type, your exercise habits, you kind of have to watch that. I think I'm okay for that, but you know, if somebody, you know,
I think one of the things that everybody should leave out of their diet is processed foods and
right.
and white flour and white sugar, because it can be detrimental. And you know, like for the kids that I work with and parents, you know, kids that eat Pop-Tarts in the morning and go to school, that's a lot of sugar. And when you have ADD and you've got sugar running through your veins and no protein along with that, that's a recipe for disaster when you get to school. So my suggestion would be that you try to get something really protein-like in them, you know, in the mornings.
In the morning, definitely.
Depending on what that is, and more complex carbohydrates, and stay away from the sugar, and you know, especially the white flour and white sugar, and you know, sweet potatoes are great. I mean, white potatoes are good, but they're full of sugar. So, you know, and the other thing is, it's everything in moderation. If you're going to have sugar, if you know, you can't tell your kids that they can never have sugar. It just doesn't work. But it's got to be in moderation. It can't be, you know, tons and tons of it.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely stay away from all of that. I think that that's probably why I don't know. I just kind of crossed when it wasn't like in my mind. But yeah, definitely, I don't really eat sugars or you know, like the white Wonder. I don't even have Wonder Bread anymore, but that's how long it's been.
Remember
since
that?
That's how long it's been. Yeah. So I mean, I deal more with wheat, like you know, fish,
right.
Chicken,
right.
Definitely the greens in there, that kind of food. I mean, because if I think if you all, also people that need to they want to see results, it you know, exercise and eating right go hand in hand. I mean,
yes.
It's almost like you can't go to if you go to school and not do your homework, you're not going to do good. But if you do go to school and do your homework, then chances of you getting a good grade are higher. Same thing with exercise. If you can go to the gym and not eat well, then it's
right. If you're going to go to the gym and then go to McDonald's after you leave the gym and get, you know, kill yourself, that's because that stuff is really bad, then it isn't going to work, you know.
Right.
It's a lot of things. So listen, I have a question from somebody for you. So it's a 25-year-old young male, and he says, when you were young, what did you say to yourself so that you didn't always feel less than not speaking English well and being from Mexico?
Wow. Okay. So what did I say to myself? Basically, I try to just – I don't know how to explain it. Let me think about this one here. What did I say to myself? I feeling less than I decided, you know, I needed attention. So by feeling less than somebody, I feel like I needed to stand out. You know, I started going through this phase in life where, you know, the ego got involved and it started saying, be, you know, let people notice you, don't stand up for yourself. But I stood up for myself in the wrong ways and, you know, got into trouble. The language, I used to hear people, you know, look at me funny based on the way I spoke the language. I remember just saying, you know, people were like, what are you saying? Or, you know, what's going on here with you? And, you know, what's your problem? So
you know, I think there's a lot of kids out there, Julio, and this is probably why this question is asked, who, you know, feel less than for a lot of reasons, and especially in this population,
mm-hmm.
not doing well in school and seeing other people doing well, that's difficult.
Right.
You know, and maybe there's Latino kids who, you know, English is a second language, so they're in school with kids that speak fluent English, and they may feel less than because of that.
Yeah. Okay. And I think I understand the question a little better. I think that, I mean, it's tough. I think that teachers can only do so much. You know, if you have ADHD, then I think perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps had I gotten medicated, I would have been able to do better. I don't know, but I think that it's just having that drive to know that learning, instead of saying, look, these people are making fun of me based on the way I speak, it's more like I looked at it more like this is the language I've spoken here, so I need to better myself. I need to speak this language well so I could, you know, so I could do better.
Right, you can communicate.
Yeah, because the same, you know, if I was in Mexico and Spanish, you know, since Spanish is my first language, or if I was in Spain or somewhere where Spanish is, you know, spoken primarily, then it wouldn't be an issue. But I had to realize that this is what I have to do. I mean,
right.
So yeah, it was.
So here's another question, which is really a good question. What has been the reaction of your parents, siblings, and friends when they found out that you had ADHD?
I think that I don't know. My parents were they're one of those nonchalant kind of people where it's like, okay, we kind of knew you had it already, so what, you know, or something like that. But my mom is finally trying to, you know, admit that perhaps I have that, and you know, perhaps I need to get it checked out. And I'm thinking, well, perhaps you do, because I got it from someone. You know what I mean? This
right.
ADHD thing, it's not just something that it just pops up in your life. It's a genetic kind of thing.
Right.
So my mom's also doing mindfulness now and seems to be working, you know, slow but sure for her. And who knows, she might want to get checked out someday if she needs to, if, you know, for her job or for whatever reasons. I mean, medication doesn't work for everybody, and in medication also, if you don't really need it for a specific job or you know, if it, you know, there's different degrees of ADHD. So some people, you know, just could, through just little therapy, you know, could do okay. And other people, you know, I've been at my psychiatrist appointments where the ADHD people, they just can't sit still, and they're just all over the place.
Sad.
So I'm glad that she's able to realize that now and she can help herself.
So let me ask you something. Did your ADHD years ago hamper relationships with girls that you can remember?
All the time.
Yeah. How did that manifest itself?
Wow.
You forgot, like, to call them, or?
Yeah, I remember just girlfriends telling me I never listened to what they had to say. It was all about me all the time. Every time, you know, they would try to tell me something important, I would just butt in, or you know, I would forget to call somebody at a certain time, or if there was a date, I'd show up late. So it was a bad thing, and
my husband has ADHD, and he makes me laugh when he tells me stories about years ago when he would say to himself, like, he dated a girl once or twice, and then he'd say maybe 3 months later, hey, whatever happened to her? Oh, I forgot to call her back, you know. I mean, because, like, he was just so wrapped up in what he was doing at the time. And
right.
We have a hard time multitasking. But if you were using mindfulness during that time, or he was, then these kind of things wouldn't have happened. We would have remembered that we have a date, or we would be mindful when this person was talking so that we could listen and really discern what they're saying to us and make them feel good, and it makes us feel good too.
Right.
But that was missing. We didn't have that years ago.
Yeah, no, definitely. Now I see the difference now that, you know, when I, you know, I don't have a girlfriend at the moment, but I'm dating somebody, and it's a whole different world when they're speaking to you, and you're just able to hear them out completely and not interrupt, and you know, because they get annoyed or sometimes they don't understand. They don't even, you know, some people that don't have ADHD, some people don't believe in ADHD.
Right.
They tend to just to say, you know what, well, you don't respect me because you never listen to what I have to say. You always want to butt in. And now it's just more like I completely hear the person out. I pause and make an intelligent, you know, decision, and then you know, utter what I need to utter.
Right.
And you know, don't show up. I might not always show up on time for a day. I mean, but I'm pretty close to showing up on time within, you know, five to 10 minutes, at, you know, the latest, as opposed to hours.
Right.
And, yeah.
Or days.
Yeah, it can be really crazy if you show up an hour late for a date. I mean, you might not even have a, you know, ever again talk to this person. But I mean, these people don't understand that you have this, and you're not understanding that that you know, there's ways to cope with this.
Right.
See, there's too many people out there that say, "Oh, what's AD? It's ADHD." And I think you just keep reinforcing that. I have ADHD,
yeah.
So I can never. And by reinforcing that, putting that in your mind, then of course you're not going to be able to go out there and seek help, because you're already saying that I have this disorder, and I can't do anything about it. So deal with me being an hour late or whatever, me being impulsive. I think that it is not the case. If you understanding that and getting the proper help, and you know.
Yeah, no, because I think that, you know, again, when you go back to the mindfulness, you know, we're able to remember that, well, we have to do multiple things today. You know, not only do we have to go to work and come home and eat, but we also are going to meet somebody for coffee, you know, and we've got, you know, whether we write it down, you know, somewhere, if we put it in our phone, set alarms, but the mindfulness thing, for me, I really can spit up back to you my entire week of appointments. And that's pretty incredible that I can remember every person that's coming. You know, have I ever, like, forgotten? Yes, I have. And, you know, it's rare ever since the mindfulness. Before mindfulness, it was horrible. But it's so much easier now to just be able to get into that moment and remember, you know, exactly what it is that I had to do for the day. So we've got a few more questions here. This is to Julio. What would be a great short exercise program that I could do each day to help me stay focused? So besides the physical, I know you and I have talked about focusing on an object.
Right.
So go ahead, answer that.
Besides the physical, okay. I like the looking at a flower, like for instance, just finding some time, you know, maybe 5 minutes or less. It doesn't have to be that long. Maybe grabbing, you know, like a flower from Trader Joe's and just looking at the flower, just placing all your attention on the flower, and then, but not judging that, you know, there's color to the flower and all that, but just looking at the flower without any judgment or any you know, any dialogue. And then there's going to be some dialogue. There's going to be, well, the flower is blue, the flower is ugly, and just notice that you're noticing those thoughts.
Right.
And then bring your attention back to the flower again, non-judgmentally. And I think that that's a big part of understanding what mindfulness is. Some people like are lost and don't understand what it's like to be mindful or to be in the moment. And when a person is able to notice that here they are, and here's that voice, or here's that thought, or here's that memory, when they make that connection, I think it's a big step forward. They're able to say, wow, okay, well, I'm not my mind. I'm not identifying with what my mind is saying. You know,
right.
This is here I am, and there's that thought. So then I think they it makes it easier for them to be able to disengage from thought.
And so that's a really good point, because one of the things that we want to tell everybody that's listening is that, you know, you are not your thoughts. And too many people will argue that point, saying, "What do you mean? What do you mean?" Well, you're the subject. This is from Michael Singer, watching the objects. Or you have a bunch of balloons in your hand, 30. Now, those are your thoughts, and you're holding on to them.
Right.
And you think about bringing them into the car with you. Oh, my God.
Right.
Bringing them, trying to drag them through a door. Bring them into a meeting at work. bring them to the gym, or you can release them. And in releasing them, they go up into the sky, and all you're doing is noticing them.
Right.
So our thoughts are not part of us. We just notice them, like clouds in the sky, balloons, you know, however else you want to say it. You know, focusing on an object helps us to disengage in those thoughts.
Yeah, and I think it also like helps us to notice that this exists, that there is such a thing as a thought, and then you as the witness of that thought.
Right.
You know, and this is also just quoting The Power Now, like you're the witnessing presence of that thought. And again, I think that's probably what's one of the most difficult things to do. And it was for me, at least, to understand that, you know, learn how to disidentify from thought. Once I started doing that, this whole mindfulness process became easier and easier and easier.
So what would you say to somebody who wanted a short exercise program to do in the morning, like, you know, 10 sit-ups? I mean, what would you tell them to do just to get them started every day?
If it's a person that you know, has a hard time exercising and is a little on the overweight side, and I would just have them walk around the block twice or count their steps. There's these pedometers that you can wear, and you go buy one, and we're supposed to, I think it's according to the health and science, some sort of a foundation says that has found that above 5,500 steps. So if you do that, you know, throughout the day, you're a healthier person. So I think that, you know, a lot of people I understand they'd rather watch a movie or something like that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't know, if you could afford a treadmill, watch the movie while you're on a treadmill. I mean, you have to, I think, getting this exercise, I guess it's just finding a way to get these people out there. I think the walking around the block is probably the best thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe jogging. For ADD people, it's great to do the trail running in nature, because something about nature that makes us focus on the here and now. So do some trail running. I do, if I can't go out and run, you know, by the beach or around the track, I just go to the treadmill and run about 20-30 minutes. And even I notice 12 minutes, 10 minutes, it just changes my mindset, the way I look at things. You know, I'm calmer, I'm happier.
Right.
I don't think people really realize that even, you know, like a short, even 10 minutes could help you be in a moment more or be focused more. This is for the ADHD community. Also, if I could just add something really quick, I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and several actually, and there's this whole cortisol thing that's popped up in a few podcasts.
Yes.
So you understand more or less, correct? I'm pretty sure you probably understand
yes.
more than I do. So cortisol is like a chemical, right? That causes stress.
Yeah.
And it's responsible. So when you get upset.
Actually, it doesn't. Well, the stress causes the cortisol to rise.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
so, correct. Yeah, the more stress you have, the more cortisol you have.
Sorry, yeah, I had it backwards.
Yeah. Problem.
Yeah, so the more cortisol you have in your body, due to stress or your anger or whatever other stressors, the more you have that in your body, the higher your chances of, you know, having, you know, hypertension and,
yep.
and you know, other physical illnesses. So exercise, it's funny because I read on Psychology Today that the number one thing to lower the cortisol levels is through exercise. And the number two thing is through mindfulness. So I'm thinking, wow, you know, these two things combined could probably, I mean, you know, exercise and mindfulness does more than just help ADHD people out. You know, it's gotten rid of people with depression. And right now is an example of making people healthier, you know, releasing the stress. So I think this combination is very powerful.
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah, it really is. And I have one more question, because we're almost 5:23. We're almost done with the show. It went by so fast. So somebody called, wrote in and asked, did your impulsiveness get you in trouble when you were young, and how did you stay out of gangs?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Wow. definitely my impulsiveness. I was on autopilot. I think I just basically lived through autopilot. And some people, a lot of people probably live through autopilot, just don't know that they are because they're so engaged in, their thoughts.
Exactly.
But, it got me suspended. I remember getting suspended once when my dad beat the crap out of me.
Oh, boy.
But it didn't help. I got suspended again. It's just, and I think it's because I just felt put down throughout my life. And every time someone would say something that touched that made me feel bad, I was just over it, and I had to defend myself, so I would just curse people out, and at the end of the day, it just, it made things worse, either get suspended, or I was a mad person, I was a depressed person, a lot of those,
So how did you stay out of gangs? That's an interesting question.
I gotta attribute that to my mom. She was a very, she might have not, went out and tried to seek ADD attention for me, help, but she definitely was there at least to help me live in a moral way. And mindfulness, so many times we talk about this voice in the head that we want to get rid of, or we want to just acknowledge. I think what we're saying in mindfulness, the voice in your head you're trying to get rid of or just acknowledge are the bad thoughts, not the good thoughts.
Right.
Like for instance, her voice saying, don't go here, don't go there, be careful what you're doing.
Right.
So I think it's very important to make a distinction, right, with mindfulness. So
moms can be very positive in our lives, in our children's lives, and a lot of it is how we present it to them too.
Yeah, so that's basically. I was never, a bad kid in terms of impulsivity and that kind of bad. I was never the guy that wanted to go out there and harm people. I didn't feel understood what was going on.
Right.
I feel like I needed to defend myself because, being put down so many times, and
and that's a hard way to live.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, I went through that too, and in school, and getting in trouble all the time for talking so much, and just feeling very different because I watched kids around me that were able to get their work done, and I wasn't, and I couldn't get my homework done and hand it in, and I didn't know what was wrong because I knew I was smart, but I just couldn't do the same things that they can do, which actually, I think caused a lot of my own dysthymic disorder, which is a chronic depression, that I struggled with for years. I'm okay now, but for years I really struggled with that. So I want to really thank you, Julio, for being on the program. I want to have you back again. We can certainly talk about other subjects as well, and bring you back, I think, maybe too, to talk about emotional individuation in a little bit more depth.
Okay,
and
great.
So,
I'd love to come back.
And I want to tell everybody out there that you can listen to this podcast for free on iTunes. All my podcasts are on iTunes under Justine Rutolo /MissADD. So I've been doing this for almost a year now. So we've got a bunch of podcasts out there that people can listen to. We've got a lot on relationships as well. And I think maybe that's something that I want to get back into this year and get some people on so we can talk about that. I think that would be a lot of fun. And, Julio is great. He's really personable with people. He understands, especially in the ADD arena, what it's like. And I think that's what makes me successful and is definitely going to make him more and more successful, is really being able to understand the people that come to you, because we live this every day. So just once again, I want to remind everybody about the Adult Support Group. It's located at the Center for Learning Unlimited in Torrance, and it's 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. And I think, Julio, you would agree that there's tons of growth going on in that group.
Oh, definitely.
Every week.
There is. It's a place where you feel felt. Everybody.
Yes. Everybody feels, I think, a lot of love and acceptance and trust, and it's just a great place. So if those of you who are in the area, and for those of you who come into L.A. to visit, please come on Wednesday nights from 7:30 to 9. Also, my book, again, is for sale. It's on Amazon.com. It's also on my website at missadd.com. And those of you who are listening, if you could go to my Facebook page, Miss ADD, and like it and take a look at what's on there, I would really appreciate it. So, again, we're not going to be on next week. It's Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm rooting for Denver because I love Peyton Manning. Can't stand his brother. He's ruined the Giants, but I love his I love Peyton. So I'll be screaming. I hope all of you will be too. And we'll be back the following week, and we're going to be talking about emotional individuation. So I want to wish everybody a wonderful week, and do me a favor, please stay in the moment. Have a great day.